This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast. After a long delay, everybody, I'm your host, Jason Staples. That is Dr. Jason Staples. You can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Don't forget, you can also subscribe to this podcast through iTunes, your podcast manager of choice. And of course, if you've enjoyed this podcast in the past and you enjoy this episode, please rate the podcast on iTunes and tell a friend. The more more listeners we have, the more we can get some sponsorship and the more episodes we can get out. Now, lots to talk about. We have gotten through fall camp, finally. And there's finally some things to talk about as Florida State is about to open the season against Ole Miss on Monday night, 4 days from now, Monday night. The long off season is finally over, everybody. Florida State preparing with now lots of things again to catch up on. Of course, those of you who are listeners to this podcast, pretty familiar with most of this stuff. DeAndre Francois, as expected, will be the starter for that game, although it was a little bit easier and, you know, nobody actually won the job, so to speak. It ended up being bequeathed to him because of Sean McGuire's injury. Few concerns up front. Right now, Alec Eberle is still questionable for that game with concussion-related symptoms, which they have apparently narrowed down to their actually migraines, which to me is not actually that encouraging, because when I've had six concussions, everybody. And when I had my concussions, I actually, after my most severe concussion, I had migraines, significant debilitating migraines for 2 years following that concussion, which were essentially post-concussion syndrome. And I still periodically get migraines as a result. I never got migraines before my concussion. So this idea that Eberle's migraines are a relief and that it's, you know, oh, it's a good thing it's not concussions, I'm not so sure that that's necessarily that should be considered a relief. But in any case, Eberle is questionable, and then Corey Martinez is out with an MCL sprain, which leaves Florida State very potentially starting 6'4", 300-pound true freshman, fortunately an early enrollee, Andrew Bocelli. Can't get better bloodlines than that, but obviously, a true freshman center is not what you want. We'll talk about that more a little bit later in the program. There's also some concern that Florida State may be down another starter on the offensive line going into that game, which is, again, obviously not ideal if you're playing against an SEC defensive line. And not just an SEC defensive line, but one of the better defensive lines in the Southeastern Conference in Ole Miss. They've got a good group there, particularly up the middle. So, you know, this is not a good, it's not a good pairing when you're pairing a lot of youth and inexperience and potentially some new guys at that center and guard position, and you're putting them together with a first-time redshirt freshman starter as well at the quarterback position. Not exactly the kind of combination that you want to get. But in any case, we're going to talk a little bit about the Ole Miss game here. We're going to preview a little bit of what I've seen based on what they do on film, what we can kind of expect to see from them, which honestly is it's not clear what we can expect from them, but there's a number of tells, I think, that we can look at to kind of get a good guess of what they're going to do against Florida State. And then we'll evaluate things on both sides. Basically, what Florida State's going to need to do to win this game, and do a little bit of an evaluation of some things that I've been told coming out of camp, and look at how Florida State shapes up for this year. I'm actually, oddly, because of some schedule stuff, I wanted to do my season preview and prediction podcast with Trey McGehee, Wayne McGehee III, from now the Tallahassee Democrat, but our schedules have not been able to line up just yet. So that episode is actually going to come out after this episode. So I'm going to actually preview Florida State's first opponent before I preview the whole season. It's a little bit unusual, but that's just the way that the schedules shake out. I think it's just a lot more fun for him and I to get together and do that podcast, that preview podcast together, the way that we have the last couple years, so that we can you know, basically play off of each other on who we expect to do what and how we expect the season to shape out. Suffice it to say, I think the basic thing for Florida State this year is to survive the first six games. This is still a fairly young team in some key spots, particularly at that quarterback position. And there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be some issues there as a result of some of that. Essentially, those first six games are the key for Florida State this year. They're going to have to survive versus Ole Miss, Louisville, USF, Miami, and UNC. And if they can survive through that stretch and get through those games without a loss, then they may well go undefeated this year. But the question is whether or not this team is actually equipped to do that. And I'm not so sure about that. We'll talk a little bit more about that in the next podcast. But I will address a few things that I've heard and basically that have filtered up to me from camp over the course of this offseason, sort of working that into what we're going to talk about with the Ole Miss matchup. So without further ado, let's start talking about Ole Miss. First and foremost, Ole Miss, you know, everybody wants to talk about anybody who talks about them needs to address their aggressive defense, that so-called land shark defense that they've been running for a while. One of the better defenses in the country, particularly early in the year. They've been much better early in the year over the last few years than they have been late in the year. And I think that's partly because while they've got some top shelf talent in the starting lineup, they're not as deep as an Alabama or an LSU and so on. And so the wars in the SEC have worn them down over the past few years. Whereas when they played Alabama early in the year, this is a team with a two-game winning streak against Alabama. Nobody else has done that in a long time. This team has beaten Alabama the last 2 years, both games early in the season. And again, this is, if you want to play Ole Miss, you generally want to play them later in the year when they're banged up and when they've got some of those elite guys that they've managed to attract to that campus, which again is part of why they have an NCAA investigation going on there. But basically, you want to get them when some of those guys are more banged up and some of their reserves are having to play a little bit more and their depth is called upon more. But unfortunately for Florida State, they're playing them in game one. And they're playing them in game one in a game where Florida State, this happens to be a season where you really want to catch FSU early, because there is a lot of depth and there is a lot of talent on that roster. You know, Jimbo Fisher thinks this may be the most talented and certainly the deepest roster he's ever had. At least at Florida State, if not ever anywhere he's coached. But given where some of the youth is and some of the concerns coming out of camp, it's a team that still has to gel. It still has to come together. And that's one of the things that in talking to some of my sources, who get to see some practices and so on, that's one of the things that came up is this team has a ton of talent. It's going to be really good, but it hasn't come together yet. And that's something that they're going to need to be able to do, and they're going to need to come out of the gate quickly enough to be able to beat a very good Ole Miss team, and again, a team that runs simple enough stuff that, again, early in the year they're actually hitting on probably on more cylinders generally than most teams at this point in the year when you're still cleaning a lot of stuff up. But they run, you know, that more traditional high school type tempo offense that. There's a lot fewer moving parts, a lot less to fix in that regard. So they're going to be coming out more closer to full strength, closer to the best that they're going to be all year. Where Florida State's going to have to be able to beat them still while developing a little bit, and that's again a concern coming into this game. But anyway, returning to the subject of that land shark defense, Ole Miss is going to bring a lot of pressure. When I watched them last year, that's one of the things that stood out the most is they are really, really disruptive and they do a great job. Again, it's similar to a team like Clemson and also to a team like Houston that, obviously Houston beat Florida State in the bowl game in terms of what they do up front and really trying to attack and get downhill and cause problems with getting the offense behind the sticks, getting tackles for loss and that sort of thing. And they're willing to give up a play or two. They're willing to basically tip their cap if you're able to make a big play, if they're able to get some losses on the other side of that to get the offense behind schedule. And for a team like Florida State that wants to run Dalvin Cook, that is going to be run heavy this year because of insulating that and protecting that redshirt freshman quarterback, and because of the returning offensive line, and obviously you have one of the best and most explosive players in the backfield at the running back position, you're going to want to do that. I think that's going to be all the more the plan for what Ole Miss does. Now, they base out of a 4-2-5, and we're going to see, I think, a lot of that package. I don't think we're going to see them get out of that package a whole lot. And what they'll do is they're going to bring, you know, seven guys up to the line of scrimmage, and they're going to bring a lot of pressure both off the edge and up the middle, and press those gaps and try to compress the space to reduce how much running room Dalvin Cook has. Now, if I were Jimbo Fisher, one of the things that I'd really consider in this game is to do more I formation stuff and to do more 21 personnel, do more two tight end, one running back, bigger sets to try to force Ole Miss to not just press, not to be aggressive on the line of scrimmage, but basically we know that I think Ole Miss is going to try to challenge Florida State to beat them down the field and try to keep Florida State from being able to run the football by loading the box. And generally speaking, Jimbo Fisher's offense is such that he believes in taking what the defense gives. So if they're going to stack the box, then we're going to go ahead and throw the ball and get them out of there is his philosophy. I think in this game, this is one where you got to consider, well, they're going to stack the box no matter what we do, so why don't we put an extra guy or two in the box to go ahead and block those guys that are going to be there, and let's go ahead and see if Cook can go ahead and hit a couple seams, maybe break a tackle, and then because everybody's down in the box, he's gone. So that's one of the things I consider, because this is a team. Ole Miss has had some issues. One of the issues that has come out in their camp, they've been pretty disappointed by what's developed in with their linebackers. Their linebackers are thin. They really only have two guys. They've moved some guys around. They're not real confident with what they've got. And if you're looking at the potential matchups here, if you're going against a 4-2-5 defense and Florida State has some tight ends that they can throw out there to block. Izzo has become a much better blocker over the years, and he, with that length on the edge, he's now more than a capable blocker. He's one of the better blockers Florida State's had at tight end, certainly as a starter at tight end in quite a while. So you can stick him out there. If you go too tight, you can stick Jeremy Kerr out there as another blocker, or Maven Saunders, who I'm told has gotten better at least chipping the edge and at least getting a body on somebody. I mean, he couldn't block. One of my sources made the comment that when Maven Saunders first got on campus, he couldn't block the sun if you were standing behind him. But that's no longer true, that he actually is able to, at least to get a body on people, and he's such a threat in the passing game that, again, that gives you something else to work with there. But you can use Kerr for more of the blocking thing, or if you want, you can go I formation with Izzo and Stevenson on the field in front of Cook, and go with that bigger personnel and force them to bring that fifth guy, that fifth defensive back who's a little undersized, bring him into the box and let him go one-on-one with one of these blockers, or let him be the guy that has to tackle Dalvin Cook in space. That's the sort of thing that I wouldn't be surprised to see Florida State do a little bit more in this game, to see them go a little bit bigger personnel, more two wide receiver sets and that sort of thing, to see if they can get basically some of those matchups that they want in the box. At the same time, I think it's going to be tough to run on Ole Miss, particularly if Florida State's weaker on the inside with the true freshman starting at that center position. It may be tougher for them to run the football than you might expect with the whole line returning. If Eberle's not in there, that makes it difficult. And then if they are limited by any other absences up front, then that would also make it more difficult. But at the same point, that also allows you to do some play action stuff with your quarterback. And one thing that DeAndre Francois can do really well is throw the football downfield. The kid has one of the best arms in the country. He's got as strong of an arm. He flicks it out there without effort. He's a natural born thrower. Not many guys that can put the ball in spots like he can. If anything, his weakness is that he trusts that arm too much. That's you know, the one major weakness as a thrower he's going to have. But essentially what those two receiver sets allow you to do is to do more play action and basically play action down the field to the receivers, or let Izzo do his thing in the middle of the field as that, you know, big security blanket. And he's had a great camp. Izzo has had an excellent camp. So that allows you to challenge them downfield while protecting the quarterback a little bit. So maybe you pack it up like that and you throw the football on first down. And that's something that in the past, when Fisher has had young quarterbacks, he's shown more of a penchant to throw the football on first down, because he rightly, in my view, believes that the way that you protect a quarterback is that you make sure that he's not throwing when he has to throw, but rather when you want him to throw, when you choose to throw. When the defense is geared up to stop the run, you let him throw the football. When they are dropping back to force you to throw, that's when you have to run when you have a younger quarterback. So really the biggest difference with Fisher when he has a younger quarterback, a guy he doesn't trust as much, is you're going to see much more conservative play calling on second and third and long, and perhaps even just a little bit more aggressive play calling on first down with a young guy. So that would be the sort of thing that I would expect as they play against this Ole Miss front and this Ole Miss defense, is maybe more I formation or two tights, a little bit more aggressive on first down at different points to try to push the ball downfield and threaten downfield. I mean, you look at what Florida did against Ole Miss last year. Will Grier is able to make a few plays down the field, and that opened that defense up. Basically doing that sort of thing, and then otherwise depending on Dalvin Cook and that offensive line and in the running game, and using some numbers adding with the tight ends and that sort of thing to try to create space against a defense that in the linebackers, in that second level, the linebackers and the nickel may not be as strong as they've been in the last few years. So I think that's really where you've got to win this game on the defensive side, or on the offensive side for Florida State, going against the Ole Miss defense. There are a few interesting things in terms of what we're going to see in the passing game and who plays in this sort of thing in this game that I know I'm curious about. Essentially, you know, I've been told that the oars on that depth chart are for a reason. And I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, within the first few games that Nooney Murray is actually the starter at slot. That Kermit Whitfield gets passed up there. And don't be surprised if even in this first game, Bobo Wilson ultimately ends up taking fewer reps than some of the other guys at that spot, and that we see more of Auden Tate or George Campbell or Pig Harrison or even Ermin Lane at some of that position, and we're just going to see who ends up stepping up and making some plays. Now, one thing, and this is going to be something that it's probably going to be exciting for those of you out there. One thing that one of my sources made the comment to me recently was that Keith Gavin actually, in his words, might be one of the best we've ever had, might become one of the best we've ever had. That's pretty high praise. And this is a direct quote from one of my sources, that Keith Gavin is, quote, already like KB was as a junior, end quote. That's a big, big, big statement. But basically, Gavin at this point, the only thing holding him back is that he doesn't fully understand all his responsibilities and all that. He's still working into the offense, but I'm told he's come in way ahead of anybody else who's come in at that wide receiver position in the last few years. He's way ahead of where Tate and Campbell and Harrison and all those guys were coming in, even ahead of where Rudolph was coming in. And then he already looks like Dez Bryant. You know, he's an NFL body already, and he's been seriously a handful for a very good secondary in camp. And I'm told that they've got distinct plans to make sure that they get him on the field early, and that they're really doing everything they can to try to expedite his growth and get him out there early, because he's that much more talented than some of the other guys that are already on this roster. And it's a talented receiver roster. So Gavin is a guy that could be interesting to see where he's at late in the year, but this may be a guy that actually contributes as a freshman, particularly late in the year, at a position where it's really difficult in college football to contribute as a freshman. But sometimes guys just come in and do it. And it's really going to be determined by how Gavin digests what they're asking him to do and how much he's able to adjust to the mental side of the game. There are still a few concerns in terms of Francois. I mean, there's no questioning his arm strength and his ability to put the ball on receivers and to show some accuracy. But there are some concerns that at times in practice he's not handled his adversity as well as you'd like. And actually the comparison that I've seen. Well, actually, let me take a step back. Jimbo Fisher has been really, really positive, very complimentary of Francois so far in his comments to the media, talking very positively. You know, you guys are going to really like what you see and all of this stuff. And a lot of fans and even media have been talking about how that bodes well for Florida State. I've been a little bit more skeptical of that. One of the things that one of the reasons for that is that I know Jimbo Fisher, and I know that he calculates a lot of this stuff and how he says it and what he says. And one of the things that I've noted in previous years is when he really, really is confident in his quarterback, then he actually kind of shunts or diminishes praise at times. And, you know, you'd hear him say about Winston, well, he had an average day. You know, he's okay. You know, whatever, at different points early on. Well, you know, he's still got a long way to go, whatever, that sort of thing. And he does that because he knows that guy can take it. He knows that, and he knew that Christian Ponder could take the criticism. But then there have been other times where he's been more protective and he's been more cognizant of where, or I guess he's cognizant in both sense, but more protective of his quarterback's sort of psyche, and you see him being much more complimentary or more positive, and that sometimes suggests that he doesn't think he can actually go after a guy quite as hard, or he wants that guy to make sure that he hears confidence looking outward, because he's, you know, obviously he rips his quarterbacks quite a bit in practice. I mean, he puts a ton of pressure on him in practice, and you need to do that in order to have successful quarterback play. But it seems that he wants the media, wants to sort of deliver through the media some confidence here, which indicates to me that Francois may need that confidence, that Fisher feels that Francois needs to hear positive things. And that's where I come back to one of the comparisons that someone mentioned to me, that in many respects, Francois is similar to EJ Manuel. With a little bit with more arm talent, but EJ in terms of just the processing and how he handles coaching and some of those things, though with a different kind of presence than EJ had, a little saltier than EJ. EJ had a tremendous amount of charisma. I mean, EJ is the kind of guy that you want to marry your daughter, and you know, oozes leadership and that sort of thing. I mean, that's EJ. And Francois is a little bit less that than more competitive and, you know, he'll bow up on you, that sort of thing. But in terms of processing and some of these things and handling adversity and all that, a little bit closer to EJ Manuel than, say, Jameis Winston. And again, these comparisons are always unfair, but just goes to say that it's going to be interesting to see how Francois handles it when things aren't going well. When things are going great, I have no doubt that this guy can make all the throws, that he can do everything that's necessary in Jimbo Fisher's offense. The question is really what happens when things aren't going great, when he's thrown a couple picks or when he's, you know, been stripped. The game's still moving pretty fast for him in practice and scrimmages. How soon does it slow down for DeAndre Francois? That's a big, big question mark. And I'm not super confident about that at this point. That said, again, when you have a quality tight end, when you have Dalvin Cook in the backfield and those things, those are huge assets if you're a freshman starter, if you're a new starter. But it's going to be really interesting to see how Francois handles that sort of that sort of adversity that's bound to happen and probably will happen in game one. Now, the thing is, if he does handle that adversity in game one, if there is some adversity, let's say Ole Miss goes up early and Francois is able to lead them back, or, you know, something negative happens and he's able to come back and capitalize on that, this may become a non-issue as early as game one. But it's something that I think Florida State fans are going to need to keep an eye on early in the season in particular. Now, let's flip the script. We're going to go over and talk about the Ole Miss defense, or the Ole Miss offense, and how they match up with the Florida State defense. Now, first and foremost, Florida State's defense this year is very similar to what they had in 2013, where it's a defense that is built to stop spread offenses. And one of the things that was interesting is how, in the offseason, I noted a lot of guys lost weight this year. And that's a first in a while. And that goes to show sort of how they approached conditioning and how they approached the off-season strength and conditioning program, that they had a lot of guys on defense that dropped weight. You had defensive tackles drop weight. You had defensive ends, several of them drop a little bit of weight. You had linebackers, like Roderick Hoskins, for example, lost like 10 pounds this offseason. And I think one of the reasons for that, there were a few exceptions. Fred Jones gained a little bit. Obviously, Josh Sweat had to gain a lot of weight, and he did. He came in over 250 pounds, which is super encouraging because that allows him to have the lower body explosion that he had in high school, gives him the ability to sustain better and to have a little more push as a pass rusher. And the word is that his explosion is basically back or coming back at that position. He just didn't have it last year. I mean, he's super strong and was much better against the run than anybody expected last year. But as a pass rusher, his quickness was not there like it was in high school, where he flashed, you know, almost Clowney level quickness off the edge. Well, he got up to 250, but a lot of these guys dropped weight. DeMarcus Christmas dropped under 300 pounds. Like I said, Roderick Hoskins dropped a little bit of weight. Even DeMarcus Walker dropped a little bit. And it's my impression that one of the reasons that they did that was that they looked at the schedule and said, we're going to be playing a lot of spread teams. Opening with Ole Miss, then Louisville's going to be running spread stuff with Lamar Thomas there, or Lamar Jackson there, Lamar Thomas from Miami years ago. UNC is going to be a spread team. And then obviously the biggest game of the year is Clemson, who's also spread. And it seemed to me that they've really been oriented towards making sure that they are able to run at every position, and guys have slimmed down just a little bit and cut up to be in as good a condition and able to run as much as possible against the spread offenses that Florida State's going to face this year. And the few exceptions to that, again, are guys on the edge, for example, like Josh Sweat. Jacob Pugh is one who added just a little bit, and I think that's because they basically determined that he's going to be just playing on the edge pretty much this year, and so they're going to need a little bit more size from him, so he put a little bit on. But by and large, that's what we see. And I think Florida State's ready. This defense is exactly prepared. It's the kind of lineup that you want to have against a team like Ole Miss. Up front, the front four is oriented well to be able to defend, to rush the passer and stop the run. Matthew Thomas is pretty much your ideal, your platonic ideal, or pretty close to it for a spread buster offense, or for a spread buster linebacker. Roderick Hoskins at 10 pounds lighter than he was last year is again a good option to have out there. You've got a money option who can come in longer yarded situations like Nate Andrews and do a lot of things in that position. You've got flexibility, and this is where they're most similar to 2013. A lot of flexibility across the secondary, where with McFadden at the boundary, with Lewis at the star and White at the field corner, you've got three NFL corners starting on the defense, and then Derwin James, who can cover like a corner at the free safety position, and Marshall, who is, you know, he's a decent coverage safety as well at that strong safety position. So you got five guys that you don't worry about as much in terms of matchups when teams go spread on you. I mean, heck, Derwin James could play corner. Just like Terrence Smith could have played, or Terrence Brooks could have played corner on that 2013 defense. again, you've got, you know, corners across the board. Maybe one difference is that the strong safety with Marshall is not quite as good of a coverage player, obviously, as Jalen Ramsey was at that spot in 2013. But overall, that secondary is that kind of spread busting secondary. It's a defense that sets up very well to stop the spread. So the question then is how Ole Miss is going to attack them. And I talked to Ole Miss's running backs pre-camp and about some of the stuff that they saw with Florida State and some of what they were doing offensively. One thing that they're definitely doing is last year they had a sort of an oversimplified scheme for Chad Kelly because he didn't know the offense all that well, having come out of junior college, was not super comfortable with a lot. So they pared back a lot for him and did basically just RPOs and some simple 1-2 type reading half the field. They're going to do a lot more this year with him. They're going to put more on his shoulders and ask him to do more as a thrower, to read more of the field, and to challenge defenses a little bit more down the field as well. And so that's something that, again, that's going to be strength on strength. What Ole Miss brings to the table offensively, they don't run it especially well. And that that running back was, he was not super optimistic about their ability to block the Florida State front in the running game. He felt that, you know, they were going to have to RPO a lot and they'd probably wind up throwing it a lot more than they'd run it, both against Florida State and against Alabama. Just because they're really young up front, they lost all five starters from last year on the offensive line, if I recall. But he was saying, you know, they're going to be young. They've got some guys that he thinks can play, but at the same point, there's going to be some questions about how they'll match up against Florida State and against Alabama in their third game up front so early in the year. He was pretty candid about that. At the same point, like I said, it's strength on strength with their huge wide receivers. I mean, Stringfellow, Quincy Adebojo. I mean, these are big, big boys. I mean, Stringfellow is what, 6'3", 211 listed. Adebojo is 6'3", 195. And then, you know, their slot, Van Jefferson, is 6'2", 187. So, I mean, these are not small guys. And then, of course, Markell Pack, who Florida State fans may remember, Florida State recruited pretty hard a few years ago and was a one-time Florida State commitment. 6'2", about 200 pounds as well. So, I mean, these are big, big wide receivers. It's not the midget crew that Florida State trotted out in 2016. This is the very opposite type thing. They've got some big kids, out at wide receiver. And then, of course, Evan Engram, who is really might be their best offensive player, other than Chad Kelly. Evan Engram is an NFL prospect at the tight end position. They'll split him out wide. They do a lot with him. 6'3", 230, runs like a receiver, pretty good blocker. Basically, he is for Chad Kelly what, Nick O'Leary, who, by the way, did you know Nick O'Leary was the grandson of a famous golfer? A golfer by the name of Jack Nicklaus. In any case, Evan Engram is just like O'Leary was for Winston, for Chad Kelly. And it's going to be critical that Florida State has someone on him at all times, and they may want to bracket him quite a bit. I mean, this is a guy that it may be worth making sure that one of those safeties, whether it be Derwin James or Marshall, is actually shadowing him. You're going to have to make sure that Matthew Thomas and Roderick Hoskins at linebacker are conscious of where this guy is at all times because he can make big plays at that tight end position. And there aren't many big play guys at the tight end position, but this is one of them. So that's where the biggest thing, probably that's where I'm going to put the focus. Florida State needs to make sure that they at least limit the plays that Evan Engram is going to be able to make. As far as the running backs, Hakeem Judd is the primary ball carrier. He's a bigger kid, about 225. Impressive looking on the hoof. And then he's backed up by redshirt freshman, who's only about 200 pounds, but is a burner, Eric Swinney. And so what they're going to do, they're going to RPO it. They're going to run pass option it a bunch where Chad Kelly has the option to either give it or pull it and then throw a lot of bubbles. And then they do what are called protection releases, a lot of those sorts of things where they're, instead of blocking on the outside, they have a guy released downfield and the corner has to defend him man to man or sometimes the safety. And where they really kill you is they'll get those verticals on a run play and they'll pull that out quick, and they'll hit it on a vertical as the secondary loses its eye discipline, and you've got a guy running free. To me, as long as the secondary maintains eye discipline in this game, as long as they're able to keep Ingram and those wide receivers from getting free releases and getting free vertical yardage, I think it's going to be tough for Ole Miss to score in this game. Ole Miss is not going to have an easy time running the football on this Florida State defense, and I think FSU's length at those corner positions is more ideal than most to handle the bigger receivers that Ole Miss has. But again, it's strength on strength, and we'll see if this FSU defense is what it's cracked up to be, what people think it's going to be. But in any case, I think Florida State ends up winning this game. If the offensive line is shaken up a little bit, if Eberle doesn't start, if we're looking at a true freshman on up there, or you know, maybe even another non-starter up there, then I think Florida State may have a little trouble pulling away. But I see this as something like a 27-21 type game. And if FSU comes in with a full complement on the offensive line, then maybe something like a 31-21 type game. If DeAndre Francois comes out and plays great, then that changes a lot. At that point, then you're looking at FSU scoring 30 plus and being able to change the game a little bit. But right now, I'm not counting on that. I'm not super confident with how Florida State's going to start the year here. I think that this is a team that really just needs to survive these first few weeks in order to make the necessary steps forward. They're going to be better in game three than they were in game one, and game six than they were in game three, and so on, so long as they don't have a rash of injuries. It's just about surviving to the point where they've improved and can be a contender late in the year. That's the real question. But like I said, I think Florida State covers, but not by a lot in this game. And I think it's going to be a game that is probably going to be closer than a lot of FSU fans would like to see. Now, one last segment here also before we go. I was on the I was a guest on the Mike Lindsley show. It's a Syracuse area radio show talking about Florida State, and he asked a really good question. He asked, how many NFL guys do you think there are on the Florida State roster? And he's, you know, they're 15, maybe, you know, 18, 20. You know, how many guys do you think are on the Florida State roster who are going to be NFL guys? And I had to think about that. I hadn't really done a tally before on how many guys do I really think are probably going to play in the NFL on this roster. So I you know, just sort of quickly totaled it up in my head, you know, sort of thought out loud, said, you know, I think probably the over-under is about 35, which, you know, blew him away. He's like, wow, you know, that's just a ton of guys. I mean, it's hard to believe that there are that many. But I went back and I wanted to kind of break this down just to see what the numbers are and to sort of explain my thinking on this in how he did it. Now, first and foremost, it's worth comparing this roster, which Fisher thinks and a lot of people in the program think is the deepest and most talented roster Florida State's had in terms of NFL talent, with prior rosters. So all you need to do is go back to the last roster on which no one returns this current season to see sort of where things would be. And that would be the 2012 Florida State team, the team that won the ACC and the Orange Bowl. Was a two-loss team, went 12-2 the year before the 2013 National Championship team. That team had 37 guys, by my count, who went on to play in the NFL. So that is about, it does seem like then that my 35 range as an over and under sort of sits about right relative to what, you know, very talented teams Florida State has put out there in the past have. Now, the 2013 team's about is in the same ballpark as well, but there's still a few players on this team that were on that team that may wind up being NFL players, so that total's not set. But in any case, let's go through and let's think through how these numbers might work out. I thought this would be a fun project for just before the year. First and foremost, I pulled out five guys who I think no one is going to dispute are going to be picks, six guys that no one would dispute are going to be first three round draft picks after this season or whenever they come out, depending on, you know, obviously, you know, depending on whether or not they're injured or not. I mean, injuries change these sort of things. But provided all of this is with the proviso that these guys stay healthy. But there are six guys that I think nobody's going to question whether or not these guys are going to go probably in the first three rounds of the draft. But they're all going to be NFL players. Dalvin Cook, Roderick Johnson, Derwin James, Josh Sweat, Derek Nnadi, and DeMarcus Walker. That's six guys right there that you know are going to be NFL players already, for sure. Then you have a series of other guys that are probably going to be first, say, four-round picks with reasonable development and growth and more or less what you would expect from these guys moving forward. They've shown enough to put them in this category. And of that group, I add in, so out of that group, I would say you've got Matthew Thomas, Marquez White, Travis Rudolph, DeMarcus Christmas, Rick Leonard, provided he makes the steps at offensive tackle that people think he will. Ryan Izzo, who has the ideal frame at the tight end position. So that's seven, or that's six there, so you're at 12. Tavarius McFadden, Alden Tate, Marcus Lewis. And then I think you probably throw DeAndre Francois. Fisher quarterbacks tend to get drafted, particularly if they start early in their career. And Derek Kelly, who, if he recovers from his knee injury, I think is probably an NFL player, probably a guard at the NFL level. So that brings the total. Let's see. That's 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So that brings the total to 17, including the first six who are, you know, sort of no doubters just based on where they're at now. And then I think you can also add a few other guys that are going to play. And that also brings up the question of, what counts as an NFL player? For our purposes, I'm counting NFL players as guys who are likely to make an NFL roster at some point. Who's going to make an NFL roster? Who's going to be there, you know, and make it through cuts in training camp? So either a draft pick or someone who makes an NFL roster. Let's just make that our standard. So I think there are a few other guys on this roster who probably fit that bill as well. Trey Marshall, Roderick Hoskins, Kareem R., and Jacob Pugh. So that then puts it at 21, just getting through those guys. Those guys are probably at some point going to be on an NFL roster, regular season roster. Then you get to some guys that have a chance, free agency and otherwise, be like Kermit Whitfield, who some team is probably going to want him as a kick return specialist or something. Wilson Bell will have a chance to make a roster somewhere, but it's possible. You know, it's possible. And then you've got some of the young guys at that point. So if you take those guys out, that's 23 guys from sort of the older classes and some of the obvious ones from the current second year group. Then, so that's 23. And I think conservatively we could say out of those guys, probably 21 are going to wind up playing in the NFL. Then you have a group that includes several people who are most likely going to play in the NFL, but they haven't shown enough yet, or, you know, there's something, some reason to think that, you know, you're going to have to wait and see a little bit. So you got Walvenski Ime, you've got Fred Jones, George Campbell, Alec Eberle, Darvin Taylor, Nyquan Murray. So that's, you know, if we start at 23, that's 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29. And then you get to the freshman class. And this is one of the deepest and best freshman classes Florida State's ever had. So you start at 29 and you add Levante Taylor, Landon Dickerson, Janarius Robinson, Keith Gavin, Carlos Becker, Dontavius Jackson, Bavion Johnson, Jawan Williams, Brian Burns, Josh Brown. All of those guys are probably going to play in the next level. Cedric Wood is another. And then you get to some of the others that are going to have a chance. Josh Ball, Andrew Bocelli, Mike Arnold, Amir Rasul, Kyle Myers, and Emmett Rice. Not all of those guys are going to make it to the NFL because of injury or whatever. But in terms of potential NFL players, all of those guys fit that bill. Some much more than others. I mean, Levante Taylor, Landon Dickerson, Janarius Robinson, Keith Gavin, Carlos Becker, Dontavius Jackson, and Bavion Johnson and probably Jawan Williams and Josh Brown and Brian Burns all sit at the top of that list. But if we start there at 29, that's 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35, 36, 37, 38, 39, 40. Then you get to Josh Ball, Mike Arnold, that's 41, 42, Amir Rasul, 43, Kyle Myers, 44, Emmett Rice, 45, Andrew Bocelli, 46. So that's way overstating it. But if we're going to be realistic and say 10 or 12 of those guys wind up not making it for a variety of reasons, whether it be an injury or getting booted from a team or any number of things, then you're still above the 35 threshold. So I think that 35 ultimately sits well as a sort of over-under. And as of right now, if I were going to bet on that over-under, I'm betting on the over on this team having over 35 NFL players on it, which is remarkable. Done an incredible job. They've just done an incredible job collecting talent in Tallahassee. It's going to be really interesting and really fun to see all that talent on the field in game one on Monday night against Ole Miss and over the course of the rest of the year. It's going to be interesting to see how that talent gels. I know I'm looking forward to it. Next up after this episode, I'm going to have Wayne McGahee III from NoleDigest.com on. We're going to look at some projections for Florida State season and for the season, the national season as a whole. Should be a lot of fun, but it's good being back in action. Once again, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm Dr. Jason Staples. Thanks for listening. I made this.